Today is Friday, February 13th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will make her debut as an imperialist strategist at the Munich Security Conference. By Patrick Martin. The appearance of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at the Munich Security Conference, the MSC, this weekend, is a demonstration of the essential political function of both AOC herself and the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, the political organization which she joined when she began her political career in 2018. The DSA is not a socialist organization, but a left faction of the Democratic Party, one of the two major parties of the American capitalist class. Both the DSA and AOC herself are committed defenders of American imperialism. AOC will participate in two panels at the conference at the invitation of the German organizers, who are closely linked to that country's national security establishment. There, she will give the voice to the foreign policy of the Democratic Party, whose differences with fascist President Donald Trump largely revolve around his reduction in US military support to the war in Ukraine against Russia. The entire Munich conference is focused on the mounting conflict between the United States and Europe, whose flashpoints, in addition to Ukraine, include Trump's demand for Denmark to hand over Greenland to the US, and his use of tariffs against former allies seeking both economic and security advantages. The MSC, held annually at the luxury Bayerischer Hof Hotel since 1963, was founded during the Cold War as the Verkund der Tagung, literally a defense studies meeting, by Ewald Heinrich von Kleist Schmenzin, with the explicit purpose of consolidating the Western military alliance. Kleist Schmenzin himself had served the Nazi Third Reich as an officer in the Wehrmacht. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, will be in Munich to accept the annual Ewald von Kleist Award. Zelensky cancelled presidential elections nearly 2 years ago, but continues to rule as the head of a police state regime that is visibly crumbling under Russian military pressure. For over six decades, the MSC has served as the premier salon where NATO officials, defense ministers, arms industry executives, intelligence chiefs, and transatlantic policy elites coordinate the strategic consensus that underwrites Western military dominance. Its guest lists read like a directory of the forces that launched the Iraq War, expanded NATO eastward against repeated warnings, armed Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen, and maintained unconditional military support for Israel. Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and BAE Systems are among its corporate sponsors. Ocasio-Cortez has chosen to make her debut as a left representative of American imperialism at this foul gathering. Several other Democratic presidential candidates are attending the Munich conference, including California Governor Gavin Newsom, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and Arizona Senator Ruben Gallego. In a press interview, Gallego said, "We're doing our best to make sure the world knows the Trump worldview is not the dominant view of foreign policy." But it is Ocasio-Cortez whose presence has drawn the most media attention, as it represents her first major venture into the snake pit of imperialist politics. This effort has been widely interpreted as preparation for a 2028 campaign, either for U.S. Senate in New York State, for the seat now held by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, or for the presidency. AOC herself encouraged speculation about her political ambitions, tweeting out a poll showing her defeating Vice President J.D. Vance in a hypothetical 2028 presidential contest. Over the past 2 months in particular, there has been a carefully managed press campaign to elevate her political standing and position her as a leading figure in Congress. If the Democrats win control of the House in November, and as a potential presidential candidate, to be brought forward to divert any mass radicalization among working people and youth. A glowing article in the New York Times, published last week, under the headline, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Steps Onto a Wider Stage, announced her impending visit to the MSC, calling it her most significant overseas trip since taking office, according to Mike Kuska, her chief of staff. There, she is expected to present a left-wing alternative to Mr. Trump's shoot-from-the-hip approach to world affairs. This is called being licked into shape, but not all that much licking is required. AOC, without a single independent thought in her head, is so much silly putty in the hands of the managers. Her supposedly radical rhetoric, and her vast social media following, particularly among young people, make Ocasio-Cortez a valuable asset for American imperialism. AOC is being brought forward to provide a populist gloss for the Democratic Party's policy of total war in Ukraine. She speaks for that section of the American bourgeoisie that is unalterably committed to the war and to pursuing a direct military confrontation with nuclear-armed Russia. In this, she is true to the political heritage of the DSA, founded by ex-Shakmanites, rooted in Cold War anti-communism, who demonized Vladimir Putin despite his open repudiation of the Russian Revolution. Ocasio-Cortez began her own political career in 2018, after an internship as an aide to Senator Edward Kennedy, focusing on immigration and foreign policy issues, and a brief foray into business. She ran as an insurgent and upset incumbent Joe Crowley in the Democratic primary in a heavily Latino district in Queens and the Bronx. She quickly made her peace with the congressional Democratic leadership and was given significant committee and party assignments by Nancy Pelosi. During her 7 years in Congress, AOC voted to illegalize a strike by 100,000 railroad workers and forced through a contract the workers had rejected. She cast a vote to provide $40 billion in weapons to far-right forces in Ukraine and endorsed the US-NATO war against Russia, which threatens a nuclear holocaust. She voted in favor of US military aid to Israel throughout the genocide in Gaza and condemned pro-Palestinian protesters in the US as anti-Semitic. In interviews with NBC News Thursday, Ocasio-Cortez said of her trip to Munich, "It's very important that they see the full spectrum of representation, leadership, and thought of the United States." Her top foreign policy advisor, Matt Duss, a former aide to Senator Bernie Sanders, claimed that AOC would provide a working-class perspective on foreign policy, and that she believes the US has an important role to play around the world. But military intervention is not the way to do that, and there's clearly a strong constituency in the country that agrees with that. That's a constituency Trump and Vance appealed to. It is true that Trump and Vance sought to posture falsely as opponents of endless wars, but they could only carry out this pretense because of the militarism of the Biden administration and the Democrats, which had the full backing of Ocasio-Cortez, Sanders, and the DSA. Ocasio-Cortez declared her solidarity with Biden in an interview with the New York Times in 2023, on which the World Socialist website commented, quote, "The most significant statement made in the interview was Ocasio-Cortez's disavowal of any opposition to American imperialism. I wouldn't necessarily characterize my foreign policy goals as oppositional to the president's or to the United States," she said. "I'm a member of Congress. I've sworn an oath to this country, and I take that oath very seriously." The WSWS continued, "When Ocasio-Cortez says that she has sworn an oath to this country, what she in fact means is that she has sworn an oath to uphold the interests of the American ruling class, at home and abroad." Notably absent in the interview is any mention of the word socialism. Indeed, taken as a whole, the interview confirms that the DSA and AOC have as much to do with socialism as the CIA. In fact, from the standpoint of policies and objectives, the initials are interchangeable. Unquote. 3 years later, there is no need to change a word in this assessment. Mack Trucks worker Will Lehman announces 2026 campaign for UAW president on a platform for rank and file power. By Evan Blake. Will Lehman, a 39-year-old Mack Trucks worker in Macungie, Pennsylvania, today announced his candidacy for president of the United Auto Workers, the UAW, in the 2026 elections. In his campaign announcement, Lehman announced that he had set up a website, willforuawpresident.org. He called for workers to support his campaign, including by running as delegates for the UAW Constitutional Convention, which will be held from June 15th, 18th. The convention will nominate candidates for the national leadership elections that will be held later in the year. Lehman outlined four central demands of his campaign. First, to end the dictatorship of the Solidarity House bureaucracy over the union. Purge the UAW of hundreds of parasitic union bureaucrats. Promote the creation of a network of rank-and-file committees and transfer power and decision-making from the pro-corporate union apparatus to workers on the shop floor. Second, ending the collaboration of the UAW with the corporations. 45 years of pro-corporate policies must be replaced with a strategy of class struggle, Lehman stated. His program calls for wages that fully recover losses caused by past concessions and inflation, a zero-layoff policy, health insurance at the company's expense, and the historic demand for a 30-hour week with no loss of pay. Third, Lehman calls for repudiating the chauvinism and nationalism of the UAW bureaucracy. Workers have nothing to gain from a trade war, which amounts to a struggle among capitalists for control of markets, and a greater share of profits gained through the exploitation of the working class, he declared. What we need is an international strategy based on the unified struggle of American, Canadian, and Mexican workers against transnational corporations. Fourth, Lehman calls for mobilizing the industrial power of the union membership to defend democratic rights and oppose war. Lehman previously ran for UAW president in 2022. He won nearly 5,000 votes, almost 5% of ballots cast, despite massive voter suppression by the union apparatus that resulted in a historically low turnout of just 9%. Lehman's announcement comes amid a deepening crisis in the auto industry. More than 21,000 auto worker jobs have been eliminated in the US since the beginning of 2024. Last month, General Motors reduced Detroit's Factory Zero to a single shift, eliminating 1,140 jobs. Ford has extended layoffs at its Dearborn facilities and Kentucky battery plants, and more than 2,500 Stellantis workers remain laid off in Michigan, Ohio, and other states. This is not a normal election, because these are not normal times, Lehman said. Across the country, workers in the UAW and throughout industry face a wave of mass layoffs, driven by automation, speed-up, and unsafe conditions. Lehman's campaign is being launched amid a growing strike movement across the US that is increasingly coming into conflict with the trade union apparatus. Healthcare workers, teachers, and other sections of the working class are entering into struggle across the country, fighting back against decades of declining living standards, only to find the union bureaucracies working to suppress and isolate their struggles. At the same time, the working class confronts an unprecedented assault on democratic rights. Lehman points to this in his launch video, stating, "ICE agents roam our cities with a license to kill." In Minneapolis, Renee Good, a mother of three, and union brother Alex Pretty have been murdered. Trump, the front man for Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and other billionaires, is determined to set up an American version of Hitler's Third Reich. The eruption of social opposition in 2025 and 2026, from mass protests against deportations to growing resistance to war and austerity, has demonstrated the enormous potential power of the working class. But this power, Lehman stated, cannot be realised as long as workers remain bound hand and foot by a union apparatus that works against us at every turn. As it is presently constituted, the UAW is a union in name only. It functions to isolate us, discipline us, and protect the interests of a privileged bureaucracy that is in bed with the companies and the government. In his launch video, Lehman knows that the UAW holds $1.1 billion in assets, with nearly $800 million invested in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The union employs around 1,000 people, of whom nearly 470 take home over $100,000 a year. UAW President Sean Fain is paid $270,000. Secretary Treasurer Margaret Mock makes $247,000. The three vice presidents average $235,000 each, and the nine regional directors average $220,000 each. These officials sit in the top 5% of income earners in the United States, Lehman states. They are not subject to the same economic shocks that we face. Lehman added that his campaign is not about getting me into some cushy office at Solidarity House. I'm not going to be moving there. I will stay on the shop floor. The aim of this campaign is not to replace one official with another, but to abolish the bureaucracy and transfer power to the rank and file. In the 2022 election, the first direct vote for UAW leadership in over 70 years, the bureaucracy engaged in a massive voter suppression. Out of 1.1 million eligible voters, only 104,776 cast ballots, the lowest turnout for any national union election in US history. Lehman filed multiple legal challenges. In June 2024, Federal District Court Judge David Lawson ruled in Lehman's favour, finding that the Biden administration's Department of Labour had acted arbitrarily and capriciously in dismissing his complaints. Bloomberg Law described the ruling as a rare rebuke of the Labour Department. Despite this victory, both the Biden and Trump administrations sanctioned the illegitimate vote. Lehman's campaign announcement also comes as the Fain administration is engulfed in corruption scandals. Court-appointed UAW monitor Neil Barofsky has documented a toxic culture of division and retaliation at the highest levels of the organization. Fain himself is under investigation for allegedly threatening to slit the f***ing throats of anyone who challenged his inner circle and for obstructing the monitor's investigation. Sean Fain came to power promising reform, Lehman states. But what have we gotten? Layoffs, concessions, the stand-up strike that left most workers on the job, and now the revelation of more corruption. The truth is, this bureaucracy can't be reformed. It must be abolished. At the conclusion of his launch video, Lehman states, I am running as a socialist and an internationalist. Socialism means a society run by the working class, not by the billionaires, who profit off our exploitation. We must reject every attempt to divide us by race, nationality, or ethnicity, and fight to unite workers across borders in a common struggle. Lehman ends with an appeal to UAW members to be active in the campaign. In particular, he called on workers to demand that your local hold a well-publicized meeting at which delegates to the UAW Constitutional Convention will be selected democratically. He called on workers to elect delegates, or become a delegate yourself, to the UAW Constitutional Convention for your local, to ensure that I am nominated as a candidate. Invoking the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution, Lehman concluded, as the great Tom Paine wrote, these are the times that try men's souls. The time has come to revive our revolutionary ideals. For more information on Will Lehman's campaign for UAW President, visit willforuawpresident.org. Thank you. Israel tightens grip on West Bank to bury the idea of a Palestinian state. By Gene Shaw. Israel's far-right security cabinet has approved sweeping measures expanding the Zionist state's power in the occupied West Bank, marking the start of formal annexation. The changes include publishing land registries, repealing restrictions on land sales to Israeli settlers, reviving a state land acquisition mechanism for land purchases, extending Israeli enforcement into Palestinian Authority-administered areas A and B, shifting authority in Hebron settlements to the civil administration, and creating a special municipal body to oversee Rachel's tomb in Bethlehem. As the West Bank is not formally part of Israel, but under military rule, the Security Cabinet's decisions do not require legislation. They function as direct orders to the military, and were determined by the Security Cabinet, not the full cabinet. Israel's push to annex the West Bank is inseparable from its broader project of driving the Palestinians from the land it claims as exclusively its own through policies of genocide, expulsion, and displacement. Bezalel Smotrich, finance minister and de facto minister of the settlements, who has long called for Israel to annex the territory, said the government was burying the idea of a Palestinian state. He called it a historic day for the settlements of Judea and Samaria. Energy Minister Eli Cohen, the Yesha Council, which represents Israeli settlements, and Yossi Dagan, head of the Samaria Council, welcomed the moves as steps towards full Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank. Making the land registries public will allow settlers to identify Palestinian landowners and purchase land directly. A Jordanian-era law prohibiting transfers to non-Palestinians will be overturned. The registries were previously classified to prevent forgery and fraud and protect the abandoned property of Palestinians who left the West Bank. Their publication will make it easier for settlers to stake false claims on Palestinian land, a tactic already widely documented, and to increase land grabs across the territory. It will give the settlers enormous power, free from government intervention, to approach Palestinians with offers to buy their homes and land, paving the way for the establishment of outposts inside Palestinian cities and towns, and the inevitable deployment of Israeli forces to protect them, as in Hebron's Old City, where the Palestinians are subject to strict Israeli military control, house raids, arrests, surveillance, and daily settler violence and harassment. The measures also extend Israel's ability to carry out demolitions and prevent Palestinian development from Area C, about 60% of the West Bank designated under the Oslo Accords as fully under Israeli military control, to the rest of the West Bank, Area A, 18%, where the Palestinian Authority supposedly has full control, and Area B, 20%, where the PA shares control with the Israeli military. Since the start of the war, Palestinian communities in Area C have been systematically displaced from their homes at unprecedented rates. The 100,000 Palestinians living there are banned from building, and demolitions and displacements are a regular occurrence. Israeli settlements have been expanding. Henceforth, the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, will be able to enforce regulations on so-called unlicensed buildings in areas A and B, citing heritage, archaeological, environmental, and water-related concerns. With the West Bank full of archaeological sites, this provides a pretext for confiscating Palestinian land, demolishing buildings, closing waste treatment facilities without viable alternatives, sealing wells, and taking over heritage sites. The Security Cabinet has approved an antiquities bill that would establish a Judea and Samaria Heritage Authority, with sweeping control over archaeological sites in the West Bank, a move expected to target 13 major Palestinian heritage locations. In 2023, Israel seized land in the Palestinian town of Sebastia, home to Canaanite, Roman, Byzantine, and Islamic ruins that generate vital local tourism revenue. Since then, settlers have repeatedly stormed the area, and Israeli authorities are reportedly planning to establish an Israeli-run archaeological site that would strip Palestinians of both access and income. In a particularly provocative move, the Security Cabinet has stripped the Palestinian Authority of its powers of administration over the Cave of the Patriarchs, the burial site in Hebron, revered in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, in the area within the city that is home to 700 settlers, and over Rachel's tomb in Bethlehem, transferring them to Israel's civil administration. This will allow Israel to expand the settlement, build new settlements in the city, and implement changes at the site without approval from Hebron municipality. For the Palestinians, they will be subject to more restrictions on building or enlarging their homes, and more demolition orders for existing ones. These measures follow years of economic attacks on the PA, including withholding substantial tax revenues collected by Israel on the PA's behalf, suspending permits for more than 100,000 West Bankers who worked in Israel or the settlements, and imposing movement restrictions via hundreds of checkpoints, causing a major fiscal crisis. These actions, stepped up after the start of the Gaza genocide, have led to the worst economic contraction of the Palestinian economy in its history. According to UNCTAD, by the end of 2024, GDP had fallen back to 2014 levels, with per capita GDP falling to 2008 levels. Since taking office in January 2023, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's fascist government has expanded the settlements at the fastest level since the United Nations began tracking such data in 2017. Nearly 47,390 housing units were advanced, approved, or tendered in 2025, up from around 26,170 in 2024, itself more than double the annual total between 2017 and 2022. This has been accompanied by a huge expansion of settler-only infrastructure across the West Bank, including roads, bridges, and other projects to integrate settlements directly into Israel. According to OSHA, more than 1,000 Palestinians, at least 230 of them children, were killed in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, since the start of the assault on Gaza, as a result of Israel's military raids and relentless settler violence carried out with the support of the military. At least 33,000 Palestinian refugees remain forcibly displaced by an Israeli military offensive on the northern West Bank that has continued since January 2025. Israel's latest measures constitute a blatant violation of the 1993 Oslo Accords that were countersigned and witnessed by the United States, the Russian Federation, the European Union, Egypt, and Norway, and subsequently endorsed by the UN in several resolutions. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas condemned the moves and called on the international community, particularly the UN Security Council and the US, to intervene immediately and take decisive action to halt these dangerous Israeli decisions. His plea, as usual, fell on deaf ears. The response to Israel's latest plans, a reiteration of Smotrich's plan to annex 82% of the West Bank last September, went no further than the usual hand-wringing. Trump issued a pro forma statement reiterating his nominal opposition to formal annexation that has done nothing to deter Israel, saying a stable West Bank keeps Israel secure and aligns with his administration's regional peace plans. Egypt, Indonesia, Jordan, Pakistan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates denounced the changes, saying they would impose unlawful Israeli sovereignty in the West Bank and inflame violence, deepen the conflict, and endanger regional stability and security. The European Union called the measures another step in the wrong direction and said sanctions were still on the table, including the possible suspension of some parts of the EU-Israel trade agreement. The UK said it strongly condemns the Israeli measures as inconsistent with international law and called on Israel to reverse these decisions immediately. Not one of the European powers or regional states that attended the Sharm el-Sheikh summit and discussed the agreement supposedly to end the genocidal assault on Gaza, based on Trump's plans for a Riviera of the Middle East, much less its signatories, Egypt, the United States, Qatar and Turkey, have done anything to stop Israel's daily violence against the Palestinians. Israeli attacks have killed more than 72,000 Palestinians in Gaza, with 574 killed and 1,518 injured since the October ceasefire, while some 80-85% of buildings have been damaged or destroyed. Israel has allowed through far less aid than agreed under the deal, leaving Palestinians struggling to survive. Within Israel, there was hardly a murmur of dissent from the opposition parties. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.